James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want to do for us whatever we ask of you." He replied, "What do you wish me to do for you?" They answered him, "Grant that in your glory we may sit one at your right and the other at your left." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they became indignant at James and John. Jesus summoned them and said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be the slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Isaiah chapter 53. We hear it today, and the next time we'll hear it in the liturgy is Good Friday. And on Good Friday, it's such an appropriate moment to take up that passage and let it speak to our hearts, and let it remind us that Jesus knew from way before what his life was going to be or how it was going to end, both tragedy and great glory. And it speaks about in Isaiah chapter 53, the whole book of Isaiah, there's lots of prophecies and mostly it's about kind of like preaching to about, if you do not turn away, there's going to be suffering, there's going to be hardship, but if you turn back to me, I'll take you in. That's what a lot of Isaiah is all about. And then kind of plop down in the middle of it, or actually in the latter half of it, here in chapter 53, is like this call out to an individual. And it's speaking about this, the way we refer to it, as the suffering servant. So when you hear suffering servant Isaiah, it's this chapter right here, what we just heard from. We heard a little bit of it. There's a little bit more, not a whole lot. It's a short chapter. And the summary of it is that what we just heard is that God had, it's a unique word, he was pleased to crush him, this suffering servant, crush him in infirmity. That sounds actually kind of grotesque, to find pleasure in someone else's suffering. That's the translation. There's other ways to translate it. But basically the essence of it, though, is that God's plan was that this individual suffer and be crushed by his suffering. But it continues on that if he lives that suffering, that being crushed by suffering, if he lives that as an offering, then it's going to lead to great blessings for himself and be the salvation for many. So this is written about 700 BC, 600 BC, don't have exact date. And so Jesus was quite familiar with this passage when he came along later in his own life and even quoted it right at the very end of the gospel we heard, because he says, "For the Son of Man," he's talking about himself, "did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." Give his life as an offering. Give his suffering, being crushed by suffering, to be the salvation for many. "Through his suffering, my servant shall justify many, and their guilt he shall bear." So this Isaiah 53 is obviously pointing towards Jesus. It also speaks to the suffering that others went through as well prior to this. Moses suffered a lot in order to be at least part of the instrument of the redemption of the people of Israel. Joseph, the one with the multicolored coat, he gets sold into slavery by his brothers, is imprisoned, goes through all kinds of things, yet becomes the very salvation of his own family as he makes his way up through the hierarchy in Egypt and becomes the number two in the kingdom. It's like through these suffering events that are very clearly part of God's plan, salvation comes. Goodness comes, blessings come. And we might say, well, Lord, that's great, thank you. Could we do it another way that didn't involve someone having to be crushed by infirmity? You could do it that way, God. And God answers, yes, I could, but I don't. I don't know, I just made that up. I don't know how he responds, but it's obviously that his answer is what it is. Now, his path is some way that's beyond anything that we would come up with, unless we're like masochistic or something like that. So his suffering, the suffering of Jesus, where does that come from? There's the obvious torture and crucifixion. That's it. But what led to that? What were the motives behind that? Well, there was all kinds of jealousies, envy, power hoarding of those who had the power at the time, who had the positions of esteem and respect and leadership, both in the Jewish community and also in the Roman community. Pilate doesn't get off easy on this either, nor do the Romans, the guards, or anyone there. There's pride, there's vainglory. And all of those individuals who conspired together that led to our Lord's death, they were suffering from a spiritual slavery. They're bound by this. They're held captive by it. And what Jesus was speaking to all along, the reasons why they really didn't like that, is they didn't enjoy the fact that he was calling it out. You're held bound by pride. You're held bound by lording your power over others. You're held bound and your soul is being cramped, made a slave to sin. So Jesus is constantly speaking the truth about who God is, about God's plan, about his own identity, about who he is. He's speaking that truth, and he's backing it up with this goodness as well. This goodness that transformed heart, that was there in healing and serving and giving and working miracles and just it was like every just oozed out of every pore his goodness. Yet that truth and the goodness, this is what happens. Anytime we come up against truth and goodness, when we recognize it for what it really is, it challenges us. Because we realize that there's something pure, something greater, something more wonderful than what we are. And that's what kind of draws us to it. And our jaw drops just a little bit like, oh my gosh, that is so true. Yeah, I'm talking about big, more existential kind of truths. And when something is good, it kind of freezes in our track. And immediately we do a comparison, whether we want to or not, that I'm not quite like that. And so truth and goodness and beauty, these things, they grip us in a way. And they call us to something greater. And we're not always willing to listen to that. And so we dig our heels in and say, no. I've got an excuse. Because I'm an authority here and I have the right that these people respect me and that they do this and I shouldn't let go of this power and I shouldn't do this and that's in some kind of grandiose scheme, but we all do that in miniature form too. When somebody cuts us off, I was sitting in traffic for about a half hour driving down this morning and I had some bad thoughts about the recklessness of the people who caused the wreck that was in front of me, and I thought, wait a minute, Father, they might be like on their way to the hospital right now and you're having bad judgmental thoughts about them being a little reckless at 8:30. It's like we all do that. We all do that. And then when we're faced with the truth of the situation, that's when there's this call to humility, and that's the voice of the Lord speaking to us. James and John, God bless them, they were, it's like you can't make up how bald-faced is there seeking for power and glory and honor, and said, Lord, grant us whatever we're going to ask. They didn't even just ask it. They said, okay, we're going to ask you something, and you're going to give it to us, right? It's like that's what like kids do, right? They'll ask for something. Okay, he's going to give us everything we want, so I know better than to just ask him outright what I want. So, and they say, allow us to sit one at your right and one at your left. I mean, this is a power move. It's not necessarily, we can cut them some slack. It's not necessarily that they just wanted everybody to bow down and worship them. It's like, hey, you know, we're with the Lord and we want to be really close to him. But, you know, hey, we've been with him through thick and thin, and maybe it's about time for us to get a promotion and lock that promotion in now. When you come into your glory, Jesus is thinking about heaven. They're thinking about in the here and now. That coming into glory. And he speaks the truth to them. And he asks them, what are they willing to lay down? And he speaks about goodness. He speaks about humility. He speaks about a willingness to be a slave to others, serve others. If you do that, we'll see what happens. I wanted to bring up an anniversary today. Yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the martyrdom of Father Jerzy Popiełuszko. I think I'm pronouncing that properly. He was a Polish priest. He was ordained in 1972. He was martyred in 1984. So yesterday in 1984. So it was the 40th anniversary. He was an very, very outspoken critic of the communist regime in Poland during that period of time. You can remember this is back behind the Iron Curtain. And after his martyrdom, there was, in a place where large gatherings are prohibited and the government's got this clamp down on so many things, they had been pressuring him, so stop preaching the way you're preaching. Stop criticizing this power that we have. Stop doing it. And they tried to kill him once by setting up a car accident. They had him in jail, but just public pressure got him out. After he died, 600,000, somewhere between 600,000 and a million people showed up at his funeral. Illegally. All of his sermons, his homilies every Sunday would be broadcast on Radio Free Europe. And so all of Poland was hearing this, his words, his calling out and calling truth, speaking truth to power, speaking truth to egoism, speaking truth and speaking goodness to those who lacked it and didn't want to have it, and didn't want to give it. Eventually, they staged an accident along the side of the road to grab his attention. They knew where he would be going and flagged him down. Hey, pull over. And they, in order to help them, but it was three of the, it's not the KGB, it's the one for Poland, whatever the initials are for that. NKJ, I forget what it was. But they basically kidnapped him, beat him with a stone, clubbed him, and beat him to death, and then threw him in a river where he was discovered 10 days later. Now, John Paul II spoke about him and would, throughout his papacy, different moments would mention how Father Jerzy was this one of the key factors for the downfall of communism through his testimony. And he would quote him in different places. And this is one quote from Blessed Jerzy, Father Jerzy, that John Paul II gave a little while ago that I came across. And I was just really moved by this. He said, this is Father Jerzy, this isn't speaking 2 years before he's going to be killed, 1982. To remain a spiritually free person, one must live in the truth. To live in the truth is to bear witness to it outwardly, to acknowledge it and assert it in every single situation. Truth is unchangeable. Truth cannot be destroyed by one decision or another, or by this or that law. Let us prioritize living in the truth if we do not want our conscience to be covered with mold. He's speaking truth to power. He's speaking truth to those who were feeling that being oppressed by that power, by this totalitarian regime. But he's also speaking to them personally, too. If you do not stand up, it's going to infect you. Either you change it or it will change you. Allow truth to get into your heart. Excuse me, better said, allow truth to get into your mind. Allow goodness to get into your heart. It's going to challenge you. It's going to challenge you to act differently, to think differently, to reassess things, reevaluate things, treat others differently. This is the call of the gospel, but this is the gospel that sets you free. I'll just finish with just this last, just very unique encounter I had with somebody recently. They grew up in a almost entirely Muslim country. And when they were 16, a neighbor gave them a spare copy, the neighbor was atheist, but they gave her a spare copy of the Gospels. And she was just started reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. She just couldn't get enough of it. And it just sunk right into her heart, the goodness of it and the truth of it just spoke to her. And she's on her way into the faith now. But it changes us. It challenges us. It changes and challenges those around us, and it does this on the micro scale, on us individually, and on the medium scale as a church, as a community here, as a city, and it scales all the way up. It's fractal in that way. But we want to let it penetrate and affect us. We have responsibility for that, for each one of us. Let it do that. Let it do that.